Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won their first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington. On the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
In order to stand out from the rest, either on the tube or on social media, you need to have a personality or a quote-unquote take that stands apart. Or maybe even is a little bit outlandish. I mean, it's all about the eyes on you when you're in TV. That's a preface to the following statement. Whatever Ryan Pulley and Cameron Curl did Saturday obviously was a bad look. Getting digits or flirting with members of the Mississippi State dance team while there are other people, whether fans or media, in the stadium is a bad look. But do you really think they're the first to do this and that this sort of activity is relegated only to teams that have a 2-9 record and are just playing out the string? I just don't see that being true at all. And in fact, in my experience, I've seen some of the best players on good teams that I've covered do exactly what Pulley and Curl did. Now, that's mostly in a baseball world and in a professional baseball world. But you're being naive if you think that their actions are indicative of a 2-9 team. No, they're indicative of being young men. Want to know how many times I've seen a baseball with a phone number in bold Sharpie tossed into the crowd before a game begins? Yeah, I lost track of that a long time ago. To be absolutely clear, I'm not talking about Dave Van Horn's baseball team in Fayetteville, but I did see some opponents with national championship credentials doing exactly that. I'm also not trying to absolve Pulley or Curl of any of their transgressions, but it's also clear to me that nobody ever told them they're not allowed to do this. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done it with media members watching from the field. But you'll notice I'm not full of outrage about it. I don't have any rage about this incident at all, because I think better energy is spent on an upcoming post-mortem on what is a completely embarrassing and wholly futile football season, which now this argument that everybody across the state is having fits perfectly into. And that post-mortem will happen next week on this show. So that leads me back to the preface. The former Razorback tight end who moonlighted in the NFL briefly, now turned television reporter who also works on a TV morning show in Little Rock, has apparently learned how to get attention. You do it when the cameras are rolling, which is exactly what DJ Williams did. Now, I'm not one to say DJ should have brought it to the coach's attention privately, because then he's not doing his job as a journalist or whatever TV sports personalities call themselves nowadays. I just don't think that he would have made it a topic or had any interest in this situation if the team didn't have a 2-9 record. If the record is 9-2, then there's no way this little incident gets reported. Certainly not by a former player who loves the Razorback football program. But this also gave DJ a chance to show his viewers and other fans just how much he loves the program by standing up at a post-game press conference with cameras rolling, and then he got to play both sides too. Did he really think that the names of these players weren't going to come out once he stated what he saw? Of course he did, but he wasn't the one to out them, so he's not the bad guy then. And really, there isn't a bad guy in this incident. DJ's doing what smart TV reporters do when they have the chance. He stood out and had a moment where all the focus was back on him. And maybe that wasn't his intention, but that's how it came off to me. But if this team was 9-2, heck, if they were 6-4, neither DJ Williams nor anyone else would have reported the two starters were flirting with members of the dance team. No, we're too much like cheerleaders in this Arkansas media circus when you have a team that possibly could be playing for a 10th win and a New Year's Day bowl, especially former players, and Chad Morris wouldn't have found out the way that he found out, which means there wouldn't be any suspensions or benching of Pulley or Curl. There's a domino effect from the way it was reported to the suspensions being handed out in a public manner. And here's the other thing. It's a dumb conversation. This team isn't 2-9 because a couple players lost focus way before kickoff on Saturday. No, this team let go of the rope a while back. They're undermanned. They've been playing undisciplined football for 3 months, and they've been ready for the season to end a while back. And so am I. Like I said yesterday, it's time to turn the page. And that's what I'm doing on this topic today, but only after I let my man Ty Richardson get on the fun. What do you think, Ty?
Well, I thought we were going to have a little bit of an argument heading into this, but you really kind of came back because initially you said something before we got into this conversation, before we started the show. And I was like, we might get in a little disagreement on this. But, Bill, it comes down to winning and losing. And the fact is teams 2-9, heading into that game, they were 2-8. And you're exactly right. If they flirt with the cheerleaders and they're anything above 500, no one cares.
I don't think anybody finds out. That's the thing. It's at this point, when you have a former player, and I don't question DJ's pride in the program. I think we all understand where he stands as far as the program, his love for the program. But I just don't think that the focus would have been on anything like that. We're cheerleaders in this media. So when you've got a team that's winning, I don't think you're going to be reporting anything that is going to damage things, unless it's completely obvious, like a coach falling off of a motorcycle.
And kind of with that, so I was thinking about that. This is a former player that played at Arkansas during, quote-unquote, the glory years, which was the 2010. I mean, you had the 10-win season and the 11-win season, and it was great. Like, times were awesome. People thought they were contending for SEC West championship or division titles. Like, people thought, oh, this could be possibly the future of Arkansas football. And there was, when I was playing soccer back in high school, we had two state championships that the team won when I was in middle school. And we get to high school, and one of the former players comes back and watches practice. And he sat down with us after and he said, "You guys are disgracing what we put forth." And I guarantee you, DJ Williams feels the exact same way. Not just about this football team, the ones under Brett Bielema. And you have to think about that from his perspective. He's watching it from the perspective, hey, we at one point had this thing rolling, and they're tearing it apart. They're ripping what we put into the ground, the blood, sweat, and tears that we put into the program, and they're disgracing it. Now, flirting with the cheerleaders, like that, I think with him, and I agree with you, he probably wanted a little attention. He's like, I'm not going to name the players, but there, you had some players doing this, and he wanted a little bad, and he got what he wanted. There's people that are happy that he did that. There's other people that are mad. They're saying he's a traitor to the team. He's just doing his job, and just in a sense. But Phil, it's kind of on the dolly a little bit. Like, I get his reasoning because at one point you had a really good football team, and he was a part of it, and he feels like this team is disgracing what him and his teammates put forth.
So, but then you come from the perspective of being a media member and a former player for this program. So now you've got two different ways to get the message across. If you're just a former player and you have a relationship with the coaching staff, then you go to the coach and you bring it up and you say, this is what I saw. But when you're a media member, that's not what you do. If you're going to be a media member, then you've got to do it in a public way. But so for me, the way I'm looking at it for DJ, I don't know if there's a way for him to win in my eyes. I think he's doing what TV journalists do or what TV people do. I have trouble sometimes using the term journalist.
Because us radio.
Even for you and me, right. We're certainly not journalists when it comes to this show. We're more goofballs. For TV, I don't know if I'd necessarily say that you're being a journalist, but when it comes time to ask questions at press conferences, sure, that's what it's about. But you can't play it both ways. You can't play it both ways. You can't be the former player that still wants to be a player by not naming names, but bring up the idea that, hey, I saw this happen, and something needs to be done about it, and then not look like a bad guy because somebody, I don't know the other media members that brought it up, but
Henry wrote about it in his column. I saw that, and he every right to do that. Like, call him out. So kind of going off this, Phil, Dan Wetzel with Yahoo Sports writes an article on Chad Morris suspended. He titled it, "College Football's Fun Police Seems to Be Dead Set on Ruining Fun Moments." One of the quotes he had in this article, he said, "This is part of the educational experience," referencing to what Cam Curl and Ryan Pulley did, going up to the cheerleaders trying to get digits or whatever they may have been doing. He called it opportunity knocking, carpe diem, let them try and live their best life. So let's kind of centralize on what you think. You don't have any problem with them doing that whatsoever, even though the team was 2-8. Because I'm kind of I go back and forth on this a little bit.
I just don't know if that has anything to do with what happens on the field during the game. If there's an ability to focus on the play that's in front of you and you get 10 seconds to think about it, you can still focus on it. But I mean, were they doing this for the early games in the season? You know, when you get blown out by North Texas, when you choke on a lead against Colorado State, when you blow a lead against Ole Miss. How did you lose focus in those games? Did it have anything to do with flirting with anybody? But my whole point is that this happens with good teams, and I've seen it happen with bad teams, and it's not necessarily indicative of a team that is bad. It's just this is young men being young men. That's what it comes down to. And the problem that I have, and I've always had the issue with open fraternization with opponents when fans or media members are in the stadium. It's a bad look. There are rules, as far as I remember, in Major League Baseball that ban fraternizing with opposing players while fans are in the stands, because you're supposed to be opponents. You're supposed to be opposite against each other. And if there's, you know, open friendship or hugs that are happening in front of fans before the game, sometimes it's just a bad look more than anything else. I don't think I take it much further than it being a bad look. So I don't even know exactly when this happened, when the two players, you know, started flirting with these two leaders
before the game.
Well, I understand before the game, but how early before the game? There's a lot of time before the game, and players come out a couple of times to warm up, two different times. So I don't know if it happened with fans in the stands or just media, or if it happened when the entire team is out there warming up, when you do have fans in the stands. And then it's a really bad look, especially it makes it a worse look if you're 2-8 than it would if you're even 6-3. So, I've seen this with baseball teams and a little bit with basketball, not at Arkansas, but at other places where there is that open communication with members of the other team, whether it be players or fans or whatnot. So, I mean, how is this any different from, let's just play devil's advocate for a moment here. Kids get on the field quite a bit. They're invited on the field. Sponsors are invited on the field all the time. And players sometimes are subject to meeting these kids, sponsors, parents, so on and so forth before the game. What makes a cheerleader or a dance member any different? Just because you're trying to get a phone number, because your focus is off of the game when you're, you know, giving a football to a kid and taking pictures with him. I know that might be looking at it in an extreme way, but what makes it, you know, visiting with attractive members of the opposite sex wearing another uniform any different than if you're, you know, talking with a 5-year-old for 5 minutes before you go out and warm up?
There'd be some dead.
That's why I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here, because I think part of the outrage really is the record. It's not what these guys did. Everybody's mad at how bad the team has played this
year. And they just want someone to blame, someone to say. I mean, Phil, you know this as well as I do. When you lose, everything's amplified.
Right.
Everything is. Like, when you win, stuff gets overlooked. No one cares about the bad stuff as much because you're winning. And that's what was happening during the Bobby Petrino era. There were certain things that were overlooked. Arkansas was winning games. It didn't matter. And so
nobody cared that Bobby Petrino dressed down some coaches and staff members. Nobody cared because they were winning. It would have been reported if they were losing.
Yeah. It's different. And that's the aspect that you're, as a fan, you're with the Arkansas program right now, is you're looking for someone or something to lash out on. And this is an example, and DJ made the point, I was listening to him on Twitter, he was talking about that he compared talking to family members and doing other stuff, that's different. He said that was different, so you and him would disagree on that portion, but trying to flirt, maybe, I mean, what about this? Let's say it had come out they were flirting with some Arkansas cheerleaders. Do you think it would be as egregious fans? But that's a serious question. Like,
sure.
So you think fans would be just as mad if they were flirting with Arkansas cheerleaders, who they probably know, who they probably see on a weekly basis?
Yeah, they already have their phone numbers.
Yeah.
They need to flirt with them. No, I don't think that there would be as much outrage, if there would be any, because they're not wearing the opposing uniform. That's probably, you couple the record with the fact that you're on the road and that you're doing that with a member of the opposing dance squad wearing the other uniform, is where a lot of the outrage, I think, comes from. And to me, most of the outrage is looking for an outlet to be angry with good reason about how embarrassing this season has gone. Because Arkansas football, unfortunately, I hate putting it in these terms, but they've become a national punchline, and this is the last joke. This is the last joke of the stand-up routine. Unfortunately, you've got the fake fair catch against North Texas. You've got when you had the two players collide in the backfield against LSU tackling each other. Mm-hmm. It's one of the worst plays I've seen all year. And now this. And that's been, on the headlines on ESPN's website. And now Dan Wetzel is writing about it. I saw Wetzel. He was able to get a nice shot at just Arkansas overall when he refers to the social calendar for Chad Morris as being, visiting booster clubs in the Ozarks. I mean, that was a snotty remark from
Pot
Dan
shot.
Wetzel.
Yeah.
More than anything, I take some of what he was talking about seriously in the idea that the fun police, if you get a kid that's pointing to the sky when he's running in a touchdown, officials think he's flipping the middle finger to the opponent, so they call the touchdown back. Whether the Texas player says, or it was the OU player says Texas sucks, or the other way
Texas
around.
Texas player says OU
I mean, come
suck,
on. Yeah. I mean, you really have to be fining a kid or making him give a public apology. We already got into this a couple weeks ago with how sensitive fans can be about the horns down sort of a thing. I mean, same thing with Arkansas fans get made fun of for calling the Hogs and for Woo Pig Suey. From where I'm from in Pittsburgh, there's plenty of different ways to say the term or the city Pittsburgh with other words or other letters in there to make you embarrassed. But this is part of being human. This is part of trying to feel superior to other people is what it comes down to.
Hey, Phil, I can close this argument in one sentence. Do you know where Catherine McCarron went to school?
No, who is that?
Okay, A.J. McCarron's wife, former Alabama quarterback.
Ah, okay, so I forgot the last name.
Catherine
I would
Webb.
Remember the old name. Yeah,
do you know
Brent
where she went to
Brent Musburger's,
the eye of
fantasy
infection.
Girl.
Exactly. Do you know where she went to school?
Did she go to Florida?
Auburn,
right.
Do you remember any Alabama fans caring where she went to school? No.
That's a good point.
But winning is everything. No one cared.
That's what it comes
and he
down
would
to.
Flirt. And I remember distinctly after the kick six in 2013, he went up to her, and I guarantee he probably went up to her before games too and was flirting. And guess what, Phil? Alabama fans didn't care because they won.
Exactly right.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Phil Elson PXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
Nikki, what's going on today? How are you?
Great. I'm really excited for the holiday. I'm making a pie right now before practice. It's all good.
What kind of pie you got going?
Cherry pie, the easiest kind.
Delicious. Yes, that well said. The easiest. I still think the pumpkin pie is probably a little bit easier, but I would say that the cherry pie is tastier, and you can also make it look like you put in some work.
Yep.
So let me ask you about our main topic that we've gotten into this first hour, and this is the only day that I'm really going to be bringing this up. This whole incident before the Mississippi State game with Curlin Pulley has taken on a life of its own. And to me, it really seems like it's a reason, it's a way, it's a point for everybody at once, media, fans, and even coaches, perhaps to, voice their anger towards what's been just a flat-out embarrassing season. What do you make of this controversy that we've seen over the last 2 days?
Yeah, I wrote about it yesterday after we talked to the coaches about it at their press conferences. And to me, If the season wasn't going so badly, if it hadn't become so public and the players' names hadn't been put out there, which it's going to happen once an incident like that is brought up. Like I'm in the media room all the time. I know how everybody talks, and someone was bound to let it slip. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And if they had played better, it still wouldn't be a big deal. But the fact that they got killed on both sides of the ball and that the season's going so bad, it's just something that's hard to ignore. And the way Missouri looks right now and the way Arkansas looks right now, it looks like it won't make that big of a difference. So I don't mind the coaches using this opportunity to make a statement and hopefully it doesn't happen again in the future.
Is it the sort of thing that you've seen before when you're covering high school games or just watching a recruit or when you're at SMU covering the Mustangs or maybe even the one year now you've been covering Arkansas? Have you ever seen something like what was reported of what Curl and Pulley did? Have you seen open fraternization with the opponent's cheerleaders or dance team or even fans that are sitting, you know, in the first or second row and they're trying to, you know, flirt a little bit? Have you ever seen that?
I actually don't think I've seen it, so I was a little surprised. I really don't know what the players were thinking. I don't know what they thought was going to come out of that situation. It just takes a little bit more critical thinking and realizing that that is not what they should be doing before the game. And anybody that would have seen them would have been like, what are they doing? They are 2-8, 2-9 now. That's just not what you want to see before a game when everybody is just dying for a win right now. That's all they should be thinking about.
Nikki Chavanel is our guest. You can follow her on Twitter at Nikki Chavanel. Nikki, I asked Phil this, and we kind of agree with it. If they were flirting with Arkansas cheerleaders, do you think people would have made a big deal out of it?
I kind of leave, I don't know, whichever team they're cheering for out of it. I think it's just the principle of the fact that, you know, before the game, they're supposed to be focused on the game, warming up, taking everything very seriously. And everybody handles game days differently. Some people listen to Taylor Swift before a game, and then some people, you know, they don't listen to any music at all. It's just everybody has a different routine, but I can't imagine that doing that before a game would make you any better prepared to play. And while I don't think it hindered them in any way during the game, it's just not what you want to see. And that just, it shows that their mindset isn't in a serious place and they're not taking the rest of the season seriously like they should be, because it's not about this team. It's about next year's team at this point, and they need to start thinking about that.
All right, so DJ Williams is a former player. He played under Bobby Petrino, was on a couple pretty good teams. Do you think him and other former Razorbacks who at one point were playing on pretty good Razorback teams are offended right now about how this team's finishing out the season?
Yeah, probably. If I was in their position, I would probably feel that way. You have a lot of pride in the uniform that you wore, and it's a huge part of your identity as you continue on in life, even many years, decades past when you've played, and you want the guys wearing the uniform now to elevate the program's name, not do anything like this that now it's been picked up nationally and reported by all different kinds of news outlets, not just sports outlets. So it's just a little ridiculous that on top of all the bloopers that we've seen this season and all that kind of stuff on the field, that these off-the-field things are coming up at this point.
Kind of fits right into the bloopers, doesn't it, though? That's Nikki Chavanel joining us. She is the editor and reporter at Rivals.com covering Arkansas athletics. And let's move over to perhaps one of the guys that will compete for the quarterback position next year. Saw that you and a lot of other media members, when they headed down towards Mississippi State, took the chance, not the chance, but the opportunity to watch KJ Jefferson in a Mississippi playoff game at North Panola. So it looked like he had quite a performance. Is this the kind of kid with his talent ability, the athleticism, the size, is this the kind of kid that could come in and compete for the quarterback position as a true freshman?
I definitely think he has a chance to come in and compete based on the style that he plays and his natural athletic ability. I think that with his skill set, they would be a little bit better off being able to game plan around him and just being able to make the team not so one-dimensional. Right now they're struggling for an identity, and I think a guy like KJ gives you more of an identity and gives you more to work with. It would just be about, again, consistency, and that's what they've been looking for all season long from any of these quarterbacks. And they think that Ty Story is the most consistent. It's just hard for someone like KJ who, you know, didn't grow up going to quarterback camps and all this stuff. He's really raw, so he has a lot of potential. But it's just going to be tough for him to get consistent. And looking at his season stats in high school, he has crazy numbers, loves to run the ball. It's just going to be about if he can throw to these awesome receivers that we have coming in this coming class, and how quick that offensive line can improve, because he's going to need some better protection than what they've been able to do this season.
So you reference the talented receivers that are coming in, and you also have a group of very talented secondary members. Well, I don't know whether they'd switch over from cornerback to safety or vice versa or what have you, but they're secondary players. Which one of those positions, because I've always thought in football, it's really difficult for a true freshman to step into a starting role and make a positive impact. But of those two positions, which would be the place that you could see true freshmen not just coming in and starting, but playing well and having a positive impact on the 2019 team?
I definitely think it's the receivers, just because I think their learning curve might be a little bit less steep than some other guys. They will have to get stronger and work on their route running, but just in general as a group, the team really needs more elite receivers, so automatically they're going to get a chance to compete for first team or second team reps a lot. And then, secondly, the secondary players, it's just, I think that it takes a lot to adjust to the SEC speed. And no matter how good you are in high school, the SEC is just a different beast. So in that regard, I think it would take them a little longer to catch up. The coaches had a lot of praise for the true freshman secondary players that they have this year, but they still haven't been able to contribute much in a game, and I think that's a big reason why. It's just the game moves so fast, and you gotta adjust to that over time.
Nikki, if Arkansas doesn't get Kelly Bryant on December 4th, are you going to be confident at who they have at quarterback for next season?
Well, just first of all, over time, each quarterback is going to improve. I don't think we'll see any regression from those guys. Doesn't mean I'll be confident that they found the guy that they're going to play with for the next 2-3 years. I really hope that KJ is able to get in some extra work in the spring by himself to be able to be ready to come in and contribute if he needs to be, because I don't really love any of the current options for the future of the team and for the style that Chad Morris wants to play.
Okay, this team's about to be 2-10. I don't think any of us believe that they're going to go down to Columbia and beat Missouri on Friday. So looking at this season, is there anything besides the recruiting class that fans can hold on to at this point in time?
Sorry, repeat that?
So besides this upcoming recruiting class, is there anything that fans can be excited about, or anything that they can look at the season and say, we have a future with this position or whatnot?
Well, tight end, first of all, they've been looking a lot better. The offensive line, unfortunately, is going to lose guys, so that is an area where you still have a lot of concern. But I do think the younger linebackers and the defensive line and the secondary, all those guys will improve. They just need to really, really buy in this spring and treat it as if, it's a job. They need to treat this as a job and get better and take it very seriously, or you might see something very similar next season, just a little bit better. I do think that this team is better than the record, and I stand behind that. I just think that mentally they weren't all there and prepared to flip to the new system. And for example, the Colorado State game, that just never should have happened. And I'm sure they all wish they had that one game back, because I think it could have changed the course of the season a little bit. But I didn't expect so much pushback at this point in the season. I kind of figured the players would have bought in a little bit better by now. But I do think in the off season they'll be able to get some guys out of here that probably aren't totally bought in, and the new guys will bring in a new energy.
Nikki, at the start of the show, I said I'm turning the page from football to basketball. I mean, we'll do a post-mortem next week, but you know, I'm into basketball now, and I think that Mike Anderson's got I think he's got an exciting young team. I think there's going to be a lot of highs, a lot of lows. It'll be a roller coaster, but I do think this looks like a team that's got a chance to get to the NCAA tournament. And I know you were at the Indiana game on Sunday. Great atmosphere, place was rocking. Didn't look like there were as many people as I thought would be there. What was your impression of maybe the first big crowd that you saw at Bud Walton Arena and how you recruit to that atmosphere? Because it is a great place for basketball.
I thought it was pretty amazing. Coming from SMU, they have a pretty good support base. It's kind of died down in the years after Larry Brown. But just in general, the fans in Bud Walton, even all the old people, I laugh because they held up a sign like old people get loud or whatever. Like everyone's just so into it and loud, and it just makes everything so much more exciting. And as a media member, that you love that element to the game. You don't just want to pick apart the game. You want to be able to get that crowd reaction, and it just makes everything so much better.
Okay, so the last thought that I'll go with here, because we want to go with a little bit of a food thing very quickly, because you told us you're baking a pie. When it comes to cranberry sauce, do you want the fresh stuff or do you want the canned stuff?
I'm actually not a huge cranberry sauce person. I honestly...
That's an option, too. That works.
Yeah, I usually don't touch it. I like gravy much more.
Great. That's an Arkansas answer right there, Nikki. Great answer. That's a trick question, and you didn't fall into the trap.
I put everything on the plate at once and just mash it all together because it all ends up going to the same place. You know, all those tastes blend very well. Nikki, we hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and always fun talking with you on Tuesday, so let's do it again next week.
Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Clutch blood running through Daryl Macon's veins. The Razorbacks win it 71-70.
What's the first thing you're doing in Nash Vegas, Mr. Phil Elson?
Going to sleep. I'm driving there Thursday, probably leaving about, I'd say 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Because I'm having Thanksgiving lunch, and that's something I'll get into in a minute, you know, in our Get Off My Lawn segment. And then instead of flying with the team from Fayetteville, I'd like to have my own transportation this go-around in Nash Vegas, because it's Nashville, and it's not a place that I really am interested for 4 days in being anchored to the team bus or anchored to my Uber or Lyft app or what have you. So I'm going to it's great because, you know, I brought this up, I think, last week, Ty. You know, I had the fender bender with my sedan, so the rental agency gave me the giant Ford F-150 truck, which I couldn't stand driving because it's like driving a Sherman tank practically, and I haven't been trained properly in this. And it was like climbing up Mount Everest to get into the darn thing. So now they've given me this really cute and very sporty Mazda CX-5, which is one of those smaller sport utility vehicles. That sucker can move all leather seats. It's got three levels of seat heating. It's got a great interactive entertainment system. So I want to live in that darn thing for as long as I can. I think I get my car back next week, but I'm going to drive this sucker all the way to Nashville and have some fun.
Heck yeah. So you're just talking about food. Why don't you take a gander at your tweets, Phil, because Nikki just shot us a after picture of the pie she just made. And my goodness.
It looks like it has eyes. It looks like the eyes are sort of like glaring at you. Give thanks.
That looks good.
I'll say that you know that it's going to be a delicious pie when it looks ugly. The pies that are the ugliest are the ones that taste the best. It's got a little bit of the cherry ooze coming out of the side. The eyes look like slits from somebody that's been out partying too late. And the give thanks is toasted perfectly. So I think, well done, Nikki Chavanel. I would ask for you to maybe save a slice for me, if I get a chance to meet you at Bud Walton Arena next week for the Wednesday game, then I'd love a slice of this pie, because I do love cherry pie.
What's been dangerous for me, Phil, is I typically try and eat pretty healthy throughout the week. I say that, but I really don't. But we had our Thanksgiving meal yesterday at the office, and it was Mexican food. It was a non-traditional Thanksgiving meal, and there's a ton of leftovers in our fridge. So instead of me eating a protein bar, I had nachos today, and I'll probably eat them tomorrow. So you know how you always gain weight around the holidays? There's a reason for that. Because you just eat, like, you just let yourself go, and you just like, oh, it's Thanksgiving, oh, it's Christmas time, and you gain 5 or 10 pounds. So I'm going to be in trouble.
Then you do the normal American thing where on December 31st or maybe January 1st, you make the decision that you're going to live your best life. You're going to be your best you for the next year. 2019's the year I'm getting into shape. It's actually going to happen. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to get muscles. And I'm going to meet the person who's the future of my life, or I'm finally going to get rid of the person that I've been hoping to get rid of, and it's going to be the best. Of course, that lasts for 3 days, and then you're done. And then you're fat, and then you're heavy again.
Here's
the
thing.
You keep stuff in your face.
Here's the thing about that, Phil. I still got that bet going on with my friend, which the least amount of body fat wins. So he likes to text me every once in a while and say, you have no self-discipline, which when it comes to eating food, I really don't. Like, I've been pretty good since I graduated college about working out, because I knew if I didn't work out, I'd just, my metabolism would be shot to hell, and I'd be done. So I like made myself work out. My food habits have gotten better than they were in college when I was just eating like crap every single day. But discipline for me is not good. Like,
this coming from the person who said that he had 2 beers for dinner on Friday.
Yeah, and full pizza. Like, it's hard for me not to, if I get a pizza, not to eat the entire thing. That's about as undisciplined as it gets.
Well, we get a little adventurous when it comes to Thanksgiving with all of the dishes that'll be tossed out there. And so my first, as we get into Get Off My Lawn for this Tuesday.
Did you hear me? I said get off my lawn now.
Old man, my ass.
Perhaps I could be of some assistance.
You're on Facebook, huh?
Well, I've been trying to figure it out. I joined about 10 minutes ago.
Well, better late than never.
Get off my lawn.
So there's a lot to do on Thanksgiving Day other than just eat. But you know that once you're done eating, you're just going to sit around. Because at that point, you turn into a human, not bowling ball, but a human weight. That's not going to, nobody's going to pick it up. No one's working out after Thanksgiving dinner. So really, for me, the day should be all leading into that dinner. Because an activity is not sitting around on the couch falling asleep while you're watching football. The activity could be, I don't know, getting out and playing football with the family. Or going on a nice long walk, or hitting the movies, or something like that. And I don't know, because for me, it's Thanksgiving dinner. It's a dinner. It's not lunch. I mean, who eats lunch for a holiday? It's, to me, that it's got to be a dinner thing. I think the idea of a holiday lunch is a little bit weird. You know, go-away parties, birthday parties, maybe lunch on the weekends makes sense. There are ladies who lunch as well. But I think on Thanksgiving, it's all about dinner. Because those are the foods that you got in front of you are dinner foods. It's not lunch foods. We're not eating a turkey sandwich for Thanksgiving. You're eating a turkey sandwich every day for 2 weeks after Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving dinner. And so I would give the first get off my lawn here is the idea of a Thanksgiving lunch. And I would add to that that you got to let everybody eat the way that they eat. At this point of the year, everybody's got their opinions as to how you're supposed to cook a turkey, what side dishes have to go with your meal. Don't mix it all together on the same plate. Let people be people. They're going to let you be you. Let them be them. And as I've learned trying to teach my children this as we move along through life, if I'm eating something that you think is gross, keep that to yourself. Don't yuck my yum. You ever heard that one before?
Oh, my gosh. My stepmom says that. Where did you get that? Where do you... older generation get that? Like,
it's just called inherent wisdom. It's been passed along generation to generation.
That's a TV show or something, Phil. Don't lie. Don't act like you.
And it's all because I didn't make it up. I heard this from somebody else. But you know, I love alliteration. So to put the two Y's in the same sentence, I'm gonna use that as much as I can. Plus, my son Gabriel, when he sees some, I can't imagine what it's going to be like on Thanksgiving, because he won't eat anything that's not a Lunchable. And if it's not a Lunchable, he gives you the blah. He will say blah for the 10 minutes while you're eating and be like, dude, don't yuck my yum.
I guess that's it's been passed around. Yeah, that y'all's generation. So because she literally said that we had to start making that rule, because my stepsister's really picky, and she would say that. And then I would criticize my stepmom for eating something, or my dad and my brother. So that became like a staple at our dinner table was don't yuck my yum.
No, so. I would say don't yuck my yum. You know, I am
don't
a little
yuck my yum.
I'm a little bummed out that I'm not with the Elson family for Thanksgiving, being my parents, my sister. They're getting together in Oregon, where my sister and her family have lived for the last year and a half. And my sister, we come from Hungarian descent, a little bit of a Hungarian descent. And my sister has made my favorite dish, which our grandmother brought over from the old country, our great-grandmother brought over from the old country. It's called shlishkas, and they're delicious. Picture the size of your pinky. Some people have really fat pinkies. I'd say it's just an average-sized pinky, about half the size of your pinky. It's potato dough rolled up with breadcrumbs and sautéed in butter and pinched at the edges. And it is crispy on the outside. It is doughy on the inside. It is salty all over, and it is buttery goodness. And it is exactly what I will not have in my mouth on Thursday.
Sounds wonderful. All right, so my first get off my lawn is a call dealing with my grandmother. So she's a sweet old lady, and I called her yesterday because I'm a great grandson, and I try and call my grandparents every 2 weeks, sometimes less than that, just to keep in contact and whatnot. And so she called me back yesterday and said, "Ty, I got a call that you were in the hospital." So some guy called my 80-something-year-old grandmother and told her that I was in the hospital in a major car accident and they were going to have to do emergency surgery and that they needed money right away. They needed a credit card.
So it always involves money.
It wasn't a prankster. It was a scammer. And I'm thinking to myself, like, you can't do that. Like, it's bad enough if, like, you tell me, 23, perfectly healthy young man, "Hey, your dad's in a car accident, blah, blah, blah. We need you to call, or we need you to come down here. We need you to pay the credit card over the phone." I mean, that's a bad enough scam. You tell an 80-something-year-old woman, and I say it because I forgot her age, and that sounds really bad, but her grandson...
It's okay. She forgot your age, too.
Yeah, that's fair. That her grandson just got in a tragic car accident and is in the hospital, that is just disgraceful. So that is my first get off my lawn. If you do, the people out there that do that, that try and scam people and say... Your son, your daughter, your granddaughter, your grandson, your cousin, whatever it may be, has gotten in a tragic car accident. We need you to wire money, blah, blah, blah. That's just like, that's heart attack material right there.
We should all be programmed now. We need to program all of the great grand people or grand people in our lives that when somebody calls you and says, "You need to give me your credit card number," no matter who they told you has died, you get to give the smart ass response and say, "Oh, that's too bad. I really liked him," and hang up.
She said, "Oh no," and she said that she's like, "Oh no, that's not true." And then she heard something in the background, like, "Oh crap!" Like that, she figured him out, or whoever it was. It might have been two people. So, but yeah, she told me that as I'm driving to work out yesterday. I'm just like, "Good grief! Like, what is wrong with this world?"
Don't mess with Grandma Richardson. Now you're messing with all of us.
Grandmother's just a sweet old lady. That's
they
just
all they all are. They all are. Speaking of grandmothers, I have one of them still alive. I had the two. I don't know, prototypical grandmothers. I had the one who was the martyr and would do anything for anybody, and she'd be nervous if you stepped across the street for a brief moment, and didn't work. You know, she let her husband do all the work, and then once he retired and passed away, she was able to live off of all the retirement funds. Then the other grandmother, who chain-smoked, wore nothing but heels and ate nothing but Chinese takeout and worked every day of her life because her husband died when my father was 19. So there is the prototypical grandmother on both extremes. I feel like I had that one. All right. My second get off my lawn is Dan Wetzel, the sports columnist from Yahoo. He's a great writer and has some really good opinions, but he just came across to me really snotty with his piece on Yahoo today. I think that he makes a point about taking some of the fun away from the sport, and officials and league commissioners and league offices can be a little too touchy with the stuff, like when somebody says Oklahoma sucks on television and now you're forcing him to make an on-air apology. Never mind that the fans in the stands may have been dropping a curse word at the same time while they said Oklahoma, but if it comes from a player, then you're looking at it with a frown. Or the idea of the kid crossing the goal line with his fingers up in the air, and the officials think it's a middle finger, so they take the touchdown away. Some of this stuff goes way too far. I don't really view the Chad Morris suspensions in that light. I don't know if Dan Wetzel is fully aware of the whole situation around this, as we got into during the first segment. I don't think Chad Morris would have made these suspensions had this not been brought to his attention in such a public manner. But the way that Wetzel wrote about Arkansas, to me, came off as somebody that just has never been to the state and doesn't care if he ever does visit the state, but is just happy to write things about Arkansas that come off to his readers in a so-called funny way. So this is what he writes, and he's talking about Chad Morris. Boy, and this is in quotes now, boy, this guy must be really fun at a party. He claimed the suspensions were needed because he was building a culture that evidently is opposed to any normal college behavior. Coach, buddy, you've had one winning season in your college career, being paid $3.5 million. Things are good. Relax. Look, maybe for you, a social life of attending booster meetings in the Ozarks where a bunch of middle-aged men shout woo pig over and over is satisfactory. To each their own. Well, writing a snotty column is also to each their own. Why don't you come to Arkansas, go to one of those booster meetings, meet those people before you start making fun of them? Dan Wetzel, get off my lawn.
Yeah, and typically he's pretty good columnist. I like a lot of his stuff. Him, 40, and why am I blanking? Not Ivan Maisel. I'm blanking. Pete Thamel. That's the other one. They all do pretty good work, but yeah, that's just a let's add in some crap to touch up the story and piss some Arkansas fans off. Because the story, like, we agree with most of his storylines, what he writes in the story, but when he takes a pot shot like that, like, you Ozark boosters, blah, blah, boozer, or boosters with Ozark, that's just stupid. Like, come on, man. So I agree with you there. All right, second one for me. The other, if you haven't heard, Phil is too modest to address this, but he is a finalist in Arkansas for the NSMA Broadcast of the Year, which he's going to win.
You think this
absolutely.
Is a foregone conclusion? I appreciate you bringing this up, because I don't want to bring it up myself.
Did you win in 2016 or 2017?
I won in 2017 and in 2009 for work with the Travelers and UALR. So going for my third go-around here. I've actually been a finalist three times, won it twice, and I'm excited
That's
about
right,
the
I forgot
opportunity.
You won it back in the day. So first of all, we got to do this.
Appreciate you.
One of the guys deserves applause on this show on a daily basis. The other should get it every once in a while. So Matt Stolz, who does a good job with the Arkansas State Red Wolves, Justin Akery, who's the general manager of the Buzz down in Little Rock. Fellas, y'all got to get off the lawn, because Phil Elson's coming. He's going headstrong. He's going to win this award. Y'all got no chance. It's his locked up. It's like a foregone conclusion, if you will, that he's the broadcaster. Because the thing about Phil, not only is he a play-by-play broadcaster, but he does sports radio.
The only reason that I'm even nominated is for the baseball play-by-play, because otherwise I don't think I know what I'm doing here. Still.
Nah, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just tagging along. It's like, I'm trying to think. I'm like the little brother that like rides his big brother's coattails for athletics or whatever it may be. That's my role here. So yeah, Phil, I'm happy for you, man. Justin Akery, Matt Stolz, you guys are great at what you do, but get off my lawn, guys, because this is Phil Elson's award to lose. It's like, it's okay, here's what's going to happen, Phil. So Michael Jordan from like 91 to 98 deserved the MVP every single year.
You better not be putting me in the Michael Jordan category.
But they felt sorry that other players weren't winning it. So they gave it to Barkley in 93, and they gave it to Malone. I can't remember if they gave it to Malone twice or once. You know what he did? He beat him head-to-head in the finals. So if you happen to lose this award, like I said, it's your award to lose, we're going to have some competition, some radio competition or some play-by-play competition that you guys go head-to-head on, that you absolutely destroy these two. Just utterly embarrass them. And I don't even, like, I know I met Akery, like, once, and I've never met Stolz, so they could be, like, really quality guys, but I know you, so I got your back. So, yeah, those two, get off my lawn.
Well, I'm happy for Matt, because I think sometimes he gets overlooked just because it's Arkansas State and it's not Arkansas. And Jonesboro is, you know, sort of set apart, I think, from a lot of other portions of the state in ways that even Central and Northwest Arkansas are not set apart. So I'm happy for Matt. He's a good guy and a great broadcaster. Justin's one of my good friends in Little Rock. It's ironic, because we'd made plans to meet for a couple of drinks last night before we even found out we were finalists.
Now enemies.
And we end up sitting down and it's like, huh. So you did show up, right? Don't worry, I did not spike your drink. And then the other thing about this, too, is it's just like Chad Morris's 50th birthday coincides with the day that Kelly Bryant's making his announcement. The announcement of the winner for the NSMA, which is National Sports Media Association Awards. And it's a state-by-state thing. All 50 states have winners for sports writers and sportscasters. The announcement is coming on my 42nd birthday, which is January 14th. It is a Monday. We will be on the air. So I don't know. I'll either smile or cry, and we'll have all of our callers and our listeners there to soften the blow for me if I don't get it.
Hey, Phil, I just want to say this. If I'm ever nominated for an award, you weren't going to talk about this on the show today at all, but I just want to let you know if I'm ever nominated for anything, we're 100% leading off with it. Just a heads up.
Sounds good. Hey, at least you're honest. At least you're honest. All right, my third get off my lawn, and I'm saying this 100% sarcastically because he has made his announcement. He is getting off of the baseball lawn after a thrilling career. Adrian Beltre, 21 seasons in the major leagues. Remember, he came up to the bigs at the age of 19, I think in 98 with the Dodgers, and is one of the greatest third basemen in the history of baseball. Over 3,000 hits, near 500 home runs. He is 14th all-time in games played and just is also a guy that played the game of baseball with love and passion and always seemed to be a great teammate, whether he was with the Dodgers or with the Mariners. 1 year with the Red Sox, kind of forget that he was with the Red Sox after Seattle and then finished his career the last eight seasons with the Texas Rangers. So I'm not saying this in any nasty way whatsoever, like I might have towards Dan Wetzel, but for Adrian Beltre, it's his decision. He's getting off our lawn, and it's unfortunate.
All right, the last one, you mentioned it a little bit. How about the Big 12 reprimanding Breckenhager? This is what he said. Hey, OU has no defense. He's talking to a reporter, and then he stopped again, and he said, what time is it? It's 11:12, and OU still sucks. You know how like you're just like, it's 1:20 right now, and Texas still suck. Like, it's a joke. Happy Gilmore.
Suck, you jackass. Why don't you shut the hell up?
I mean, saying you suck is not... Listen, there's a lot more offensive things you can say than you suck. And if we're getting mad at a college football player for saying his rival sucks, that's disgraceful. Like, it's absolutely embarrassing. Apparently, this is his second violation. Bob Bowlesby, who's the Big 12 commissioner, came out and said, Breckenhager has violated the conference rule that prohibits coaches, student-athletes, athletic department staff, and university personnel from making negative comments about other member institutions about the University of Oklahoma. And then he had to release a statement, and in that statement he said he was truly sorry, which
I'm sure he was as sorry as anybody.
We all know, Phil, that was a deep, heartfelt apology from Breckenhager on his rival, the University of Oklahoma.
At least they can point to a rule and say, you know, you broke this rule. So
Get off my lawn, Big 12. Change the rule. That's awful.
Remember, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I mean, in sports, fans, schools, teams, a little bit oversensitive. And sometimes you just got to stop taking yourself so seriously. And I think Oklahoma, in that case, might be where they need to think about it a little more.
I would agree.
All right, well, that's Get Off My Lawn for this Tuesday.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.